As we walked, I caught glimpses of an electric blue barrier stretching across the sky between the platforms above. "What is that?" I asked.
"Our planetary shield," FM said. "It protects us from the superiority gunships. Jorgen told me we apparently have a cytonic inhibitor. I guess that must have activated around the same time we put the shield up. We still don't really understand how all these systems work."
If I had more information about that, I could have used it as currency. But most of this technology was foreign to me as well. Jorgen had the key to the inhibitor in his mind, but he hadn't known it existed. I wondered if being born here attuned him to it somehow. That would also explain why the slugs could use their abilities as well. FM led me to a room with a slightly higher, domed ceiling. Several humans with a variety of skin tones, all in shades of beige and brown, sat around a large table. I wondered if those tones revealed their places of origin, like with us, or if they were indicative of something else. The woman I'd fled from, Jeshua Waite, FM had called her, glared at me. The meanings of facial expressions varied from species to species, and Phineas had made me memorize many of them before I left for Starsight. But I was pretty sure that glare meant the same thing in every humanoid culture. At the far end of the table sat the only other non-human in the room, a Dione with blue skin. This would be Minister Kuna.
"Alanik of the Urdale," they said. "Welcome."
They, like everyone in the room, had a translator pin perched on their shoulder. I hadn't had this many in my ship, so Kuna must have brought a large number as well. Jorgen offered one to me and I pinned it on.
"Yes, welcome,"
said a man in a white uniform. I remembered him vaguely now. He'd accompanied Jeshua the first time we spoke.
"I am Admiral Cobb, and this is Minister Kuna."
Admiral Cobb had hair growing from the space below his nose, a big white bush of it. That had to be impractical when his nostrils cleared. Or maybe the bush existed to collect the contents. That was a disgusting thought. I wasn't supposed to judge other cultures' practices. Phineas said we had to be open-minded about the customs of other species if we wanted them to be open-minded about ours. I understood that in theory, but it didn't make it easy. Admiral Cobb went around the room, introducing Jeshua Waite and several people who seemed to be her attendants, though I didn't understand the significance of their titles or manage to remember their names. Phineas would have been disappointed. A good spy, she'd said, always paid attention to detail. Unfortunately, I was distracted by Snuggles, who slipped off Jorgen's shoulders and onto the table, meandering over to Cobb.
"Is it necessary for those things to be here?"
asked a man to Jeshua's right.
"Yes,"
Cobb said.
"The pilots have been instructed to carry their Tanix with them at all times." "Could we at least get rid of that one?"
the man asked, pointing at the red and black slug.
"We all heard what it did." "Boom Slug isn't going to hurt anyone," Jorgen said. "I'm working with him." "Perhaps the pilots could step outside then,"
the man said,
"since this isn't the place to discuss the Tanix program."
He looked meaningfully at Jeshua. While I didn't know enough about human expressions to deduce the full meaning, I could guess. "I know that the Tanix are hyperdrives," I said. Everyone in the room looked at me in alarm, including FM and Jorgen, though I wasn't going to reveal that they'd given it away. "We Urdale are not as ignorant as the superiority assumes."
"Your species shows great promise," Kuna said. "That's why you were selected from among the lesser species to try out for our military exercise."
I tried not to bristle at the term lesser species. This wasn't the time to split twigs.
"That military exercise showed up on our doorstep and tried to kill us," Jeshua said. "So let's not make it sound like such an honor to be invited."
Ah. So the superiority was gathering a military force to destroy the humans. That made sense. Perhaps it was a good thing, then, that I'd avoided recruitment at Starsight.
Now I knew the secret I'd meant to glean there, and I hadn't made an enemy out of the humans. Jeshua continued to glare at me. Most of the humans, anyway.
Let's get to the point, Jeshua said. Why have you returned, Alanik? What do you want?
Kuna leaned back and their eyes widened, a Dione gesture of discomfort, I thought. FM stepped back against the door where she still stood, while Jorgen tried unsuccessfully to get Snuggles to return to him. I would have written Jeshua's direct question off as human aggression, but it seemed not all the humans accepted it as normal. Interesting. I returned because I think we can help each other, I said. The superiority is also the enemy of my people.
The superiority is not the enemy, Kuna said quickly. Winzik, the current leader of the superiority military, has taken a hard line against the humans. But the superiority itself is not a monolith. It is a sprawling amalgamation of diverse peoples and perspectives, none of which can be summarized with a single creed or... Yes, as you've said,
Admiral Cobb cut in.
But whatever you want to call it, its military is trying to exterminate us, and that makes us enemies. I think the more immediate question, Jeshua said, is what the Urdale have to offer us.
I stood up straighter. Like FM, I had not been offered a seat at the table. I didn't know anything about human customs. Phineas would want me to reserve judgment, to allow that perhaps in the human culture, being left to stand was a gesture of respect. But it obviously wasn't. Any idiot could see that. I can teach your cytonics, I said. My skills are more developed because I've had knowledge and training that your cytonics lack. If we were allies, we would share information with you. We have knowledge and experience with the superiority that you don't have here in isolation. I shot a look at Minister Kuna, who certainly had far more experience with the superiority than I had, but they didn't argue with me. Besides, experience cooperating with the superiority wasn't the same as experience resisting. Jeshua hesitated. They did need help with cytonics, and they knew it. Admiral Cobb cleared his throat.
What exactly do you want in return?
He asked me.
An alliance between our governments?
That wasn't something I could officially offer, not with things the way they were. An alliance between the humans of Detritus and the independence faction of Redon, I said. I might not have that authority either, but Rinnakeen did, and he'd sent me. I need help to defend my people and to inspire others to fight. Once we've secured our military base, we could formalize the alliance, build a plan to resist together. Your people and mine resisted together in the last war.
And we lost, Jeshua said. That's how we ended up in this fix to begin with.
I didn't like the implication that the Urdale were at fault for that. We were allies for generations, not only in the last human war. And now my people are in trouble, I said. Unity tried to suppress the history, but I'd read the books Rinnakeen had on the subject. A rival faction is rounding up those who want to maintain independence from the superiority, and they're going to use us as leverage. If we first work together to rescue my allies, we can then build a coalition to fight back against the superiority together.
So you're asking for help, Jeshua said. Not offering help to us. I think Alanik is saying that an alliance between your peoples would be mutually beneficial, Kuna said. And I concur. The Urdale are still somewhat aggressive, but if that aggression can be properly channeled...
That was enough. We aren't aggressive, I said. We are defending ourselves, same as you are. And together, we have more resources...
We are using all our resources to help ourselves, Jeshua said. It seems like a good offer, Cobb cut in. If we share knowledge and resources, we'll all be better positioned to fight back.
Maybe, Jeshua said.
But if we align ourselves with rebels,
We might lose the opportunity to bargain with the superiority. They are the ones with the real power.
FM and Jorgen both looked at me. The last time they'd talked about bargaining with the superiority, I'd reacted poorly. That clearly had been the wrong tactic. Finis said a good spy was level-headed, measuring her reactions. If you bargain with them, I said, you will always find that your wood returns to you rotten.
Regardless, Jeshua said, mostly to Cobb, we can't send our starships away. We need them to defend Detritus.
The shield is defending us now, Cobb said. This might be the best time to send some of our ships away, to strike out instead of hunkering down here and waiting for the superiority to devise a new way to come at us.
This isn't our decision, Jeshua snapped. An interplanetary alliance should be voted on by the Assembly.
That depends, Cobb said. If it's a military operation, then the DDF should make the call.
I didn't know enough about human politics to know who was correct, but I did know enough about politics in general to guess that everyone would interpret the law in the way that best suited themselves. I reached out to Jorgen's mind, hoping he wouldn't react visibly. Do you agree with them? I asked him. Jorgen stared at his unruly Tanix, who was lying on the table just out of his reach, fluting softly.
I don't know, Jorgen said. It isn't my call.
I know it isn't your call, I responded. I'm asking what you think.
We don't have a policy for this. There's no precedent.
That wasn't an opinion either. Were these humans not even allowed to think for themselves? How had they managed to outlaw that?
Perhaps you could offer Alanik some quarters while you discuss it, Kuna said.
Yes,
Jeshua said. I think that's an excellent idea.
I didn't. My people are in danger, I said. I don't know how long they have before they're turned over to the superiority. Aside from FM and Jorgen, only Cobb looked sympathetic. The rest merely stared at me like my problems were none of their concern. Still, my only choices were to wait them out or return home empty-handed, with nowhere to run and no way to help my brother, or Rinnikin, or the rest of the resistance. But I would appreciate that, I said, trying to sound like I meant it. Thank you for your hospitality. If they took too long, I'd have to come up with another plan. I couldn't leave my people in Unity's hands for long. But I couldn't save any of my people on my own. Chapter 6. Because Kuna professed to be some sort of ambassador to lesser species, the humans allowed them to escort me to a low-ceilinged room with strange rectangular furniture. At home, we carved our furniture from wood, and even basic, inexpensive pieces would have designs carved into them. The more upscale furniture would be soaked and bent, the chair arms and headboards molded into swirling shapes. I stood in front of an armchair that consisted of a fabric cushion stretched over a metal frame, every piece forming a square angle. I sat down on it. It was more comfortable than it looked, I would grant them that. Kuna assured me that they would speak to the humans about my offer and then left me alone in the room. They weren't gone more than a minute before there was a soft knock on the door. I could feel a congregation of cytonic resonances on the other side, Jorgen and his slugs. Come in, I called, and Jorgen opened the door. FM stood on the other side with him, holding a basket of something green and flaky. They both stepped in and shut the door behind them.
Cobb said we could bring you food, FM said, but we didn't know what your people eat. Kuna said that algae wasn't toxic for your people, so we brought some for you to try.
She pushed the basket into my hands. I knew what algae was, but I'd never thought to eat it. It grew beneath the surface bark sometimes and could form in our atmospheric water generators if we weren't careful to keep them clean.
Kuna also told us that you were more likely to eat fruits and tree nuts. We don't have any nuts, and this was the only fruit we could find.
She shoved a small object into my hand.
Detritus isn't the best place to grow things.
The fruit was red and roughly round and had a small brown stem at the top. It was much smaller than the fruits that grew on the trees at home, more similar to one that might grow on a vine on one of the farming branches.
Thank you, I said.
I moved over to a small table, also square with straight-angled legs. The conference table had been the same. These humans were very fond of right angles.
I'm sorry about my mother, Jorgen said.
Your mother?
Jeshua Waite. She's a lot to deal with sometimes, but she means well.
FM looked like she wanted to argue, but she didn't. At home, it would be considered rude to comment on the failings of someone else's family member, unless one was specifically invited to. Possibly humans were the same. There was another knock on the door, and Jorgen opened it. Three more humans stood there, each with a yellow tanix tucked into a sling across their chest. The humans all wore the similar clothes, flight suits, with the same patch affixed to their shoulders. One was a woman with dark skin and long, curly hair that hung halfway down her back. It still surprised me that all of the humans had hair and skin in various shades of bark colors, like they'd been drawn in different shades with the same pencil. All except the last man who walked in. His hair was a shade of red nearly as bright as the stripes on Boomslug, and it contrasted against his pale skin. I wondered if that color was natural, or if humans sometimes dyed their hair the way my people did.
We heard Alanique was back, said the girl with the curly hair. We wanted to see for ourselves, and Cobb said it was okay as long as we didn't help her escape.
I hoped he said that in jest. I don't need anyone's help escaping, I said. I'm here of my own free will.
Of course you are, FM said. This is Kimmelin, Rig, and Arturo.
The one she said was Arturo, a man with brown hair, stood by the door staring at me. The humans had done that less than I would have thought, really. The only reason I could keep from staring at them was because there were so many of them. This didn't feel rude, though. More like he was sizing me up. I stared right back at him to let him know I was up to the challenge. He seemed more puzzled by that than anything, so maybe I'd misread the situation. Kimmelin came over and sat down next to me.
Are they feeding you algae strips? They could at least have brought you some dessert. Kuna said the Urdale don't artificially sweeten their food, FM said.
Sweeten it? Most of the spices that grew on the vines were flavorful, but not particularly sweet, which was good, because some of the fruits we grew were too sweet for my taste, especially when they were raw. This is fine, I said. Thank you. I lifted the fruit, testing the skin, which was thin and crisp.
You can just bite into it, Kimmelin said. You don't need to peel it or anything, unless your species doesn't like peel. We could bring you a knife.
I bit into the fruit, which had a satisfying crunch to it, not unlike pitch fruit back home. It wasn't nearly as sweet, though. It had more of a brisk flavor.
Is it awful?
Kimmelin asked. No, it's good, I said. Thank you.
You don't have to say that if you hate it,
FM said.
We don't have a lot of fruit, but we can find you something else.
They were being kind, but I wasn't here to discuss culinary habits. If their politicians refused to help me, I could at least collect more information. Why are people afraid of your tanix? I asked Jorgen. You called it a boom slug?
Yeah, he did, FM said, and Kimmelin and Rig both snickered. Are we talking about that? Rig asked. She definitely doesn't have clearance. She already figured out about the hyperdrives,
FM said. My apologies for announcing that in front of your superiors, I said.
It's okay,
Jorgen said.
Thank you for making it sound like you already knew.
But the boom slug, I said. Boomslug seemed to recognize its name because it descended Jorgen's arm and slid across the table toward me.
It exploded once,
Jorgen said.
Right in my face.
He rubbed one of the cuts on his cheek self-consciously. I leaned away as it approached. It exploded?
Watch out for your algae strips,
Kimmelin said. And sure enough, the slug began to sniff them speculatively.
This explosion, I said. It was cytonic? Energy pushing out from it and slicing your face?
Yes,
Jorgen said.
How did you?
I stared at the slug in alarm. That Tanix can use mind blades?
What's a mind blade?
Rig asked. Mind blades were an advanced cytonic ability. If this creature could produce them, then it must be a powerful cytonic life form. Though the idea that it could produce a mind blade when I couldn't was frankly a little insulting. I've only seen them once, I said. I could have kept this information to myself, but I didn't see how they could use it against me, and giving it to them might make them feel comfortable giving more information to me. Only one of the cytonics on Redon can produce them. They are energy from the negative realm pulled into ours with fantastic force. I watched the slug carefully as it gripped the edge of my algae strip with its mouth and slowly retracted the strip from the basket. They are tremendously difficult to produce. FM smiled.
So Boomslug is an overachiever.
I would like to see it in action, I said. Jorgen scooted his chair away from me.
Not with us sitting right here.
The slug slowly drew the algae into its mouth, watching quietly. There was something ominous about it, especially now that I knew what it did. Are there other types? I asked. Communication slugs? Inhibitor slugs, perhaps?
We have slugs that power hypercoms, FM said. So far, we haven't found a good use for those without a full hypercom, so the pilots aren't trying to bond to them. I don't know about inhibitor slugs, though.
Are inhibitors powered by a cytonic?
Jorgen asked.
Power,
Boomslug said. That was also unsettling. Sometimes, I said. It takes a great deal of power, and generally cooperation between multiple cytonics to accomplish. But the Superiority have hyperdrives that work without a cytonic present. If they are using Tanix to power their hyperdrives, perhaps there are inhibitor slugs as well.
If it takes multiple cytonics,
Rig said,
I wonder if it requires multiple Tanix. We've only begun to learn what they can do when they work together.
Boomslug continued to munch placidly on the algae strip. The idea of this thing collaborating was even more terrifying.
What can you tell us about hyperjumping?
Rig asked.
Obviously, you know how to do that.
I hesitated. Jorgen and FM and their friends were sharing information with me. I wondered if this was the game. Freely give up what they knew so that I would share what I knew with them.
She's not going to tell us anything yet,
Jorgen said.
That's her bargaining chip. She wants help from the DDF in exchange for that information.
Oh,
Rig said.
Sorry.
Apparently, that wasn't the game. It's all right, I said. I would like to teach you what I know, if you're willing to work with me.
I'd like to,
Jorgen said,
but it's not our decision.
About that, I said. I asked you for your opinion earlier, but you never gave it to me. Jorgen sighed.
I don't know who should make the decision about an alliance with your people. I think the Assembly has a point when they say diplomacy is a political matter, not a military one. But the military has been making decisions for the Assembly for so many years, it seems like a bit of a power grab for them to reverse course on that now.
It's because of Cobb, I think, Kimmelin said. Some of the people on the Assembly say he's not fit to make these decisions.
Are they really saying that?
Rig asked.
They are, Arturo said. The Assembly has been in conflict with the DDF for years, wanting more say in operations. They were too afraid to take power from Ironsides when the war was so close to the surface. But now that the fighting is farther away, people aren't as scared, even though our situation is worse. The Assembly is starting to think about ways to take power away from the DDF, trying to find other ways to deal with the Superiority now that we know more about them.
Are all of your Assembly dealings so public? I asked.
No, FM said. He knows because his girlfriend's mother is an assembly leader.
Arturo suddenly looked uncomfortable, but he didn't deny it. The pin translated girlfriend as potential mate. I wondered if humans got embarrassed discussing such pairings before they were finalized. Some did on Redon. It depended on what tree you were from.
I went home to see my father a couple of days ago, he said, but neither of my parents would listen to me. They think I've been spending too much time with Cobb.
They do have a point about the superiority, FM said. Finding other methods to deal with them seems like a good thing. It's not healthy for us to think of every moving target as something to shoot at.
She looked at me like she already knew I would argue. She wasn't wrong. It must be tempting to think that way after years of fighting, but that was the same attitude that led my people right into the superiority's trap. The humans' military had experience we on Redon could only read about in books, but it was useless without the will to fight. If they fell for the superiority's lies, then I couldn't rely on them to help pull Redon out. Some forces can't be reasoned with, I said. They can only be opposed.
The DDF would agree with you, Arturo said, but the Assembly is starting to think otherwise.
Otherwise, his Tanik said.
Which is why I don't know who's right,
Jorgen said.
You say we shouldn't talk to the superiority, but I see the appeal. If we could strike an accord with them, lives could be saved.
It depends on what you mean by saved, I said. If you live, but give away your autonomy, your ability to make decisions for yourselves, to be treated as equals.
Do we have autonomy if all we can ever do is fight for our lives?
Arturo asked.
No one from the superiority has ever treated us like equals. They treat us like insects.
They're afraid of us, FM said.
And the Assembly wants to convince them that they don't need to be, but the DDF keeps doing things that escalate the situation.
Like turning on the shield,
Rig said,
and developing hyperdrives. The better we get at defending ourselves, the more we convince them they'd better bring everything they have to destroy us.
But if you don't do those things, they will enslave you, I said. Is that what it's like for your people? FM asked. You're slaves to the superiority? I hesitated. There were so many on Redon who didn't see it that way. No, I said, because we have maintained our autonomy. Instead of killing us, they isolated us, denying us hyperdrives and mostly leaving us alone. The humans all stared at me.
That must be nice, Kimmelin said finally.
I looked down at the table. These people had been on the front lines, fighting people who wanted them dead. Our squabbles on Redon must look so easy to them by comparison. I'm not trying to compare our situations, I said carefully. But the superiority keeps us all in cages of different kinds. They control us and call it peace, but it isn't peace when we don't have a choice.
That's fair,
FM said. But none of the humans would quite meet my eyes. This all clearly weighed heavily on them. I'd misjudged them, I realized. It wasn't that the humans couldn't think for themselves. It was that they had fought for so long, with so few resources, but only for survival, not for any particular ideal. They were desperate and confused, and so they were striking around in the dark, making confused, desperate decisions. That was something I could offer them, I realized. Hope. A goal beyond mere survival. Our peoples were both autonomous once, I said. And Jeshua Waite is right. We lost that war together. But before that, we worked together for centuries. Cytonics from my planet made contact with yours long before either of us were spacefaring. You inspired myths that we still treasure, and your people wrote about mine in their own mythology. One of your ancient writers even preserved bits of our language,
so that when we began to travel across the universe, some of your people could speak to mine. I'd never read the book, though now I wished I had. There were still a few copies on Redon. Something about a ring. We don't have to let the superiority tell us we're lesser species. We can return to our ancestors' fight. We can pick up our old alliances. We can remind the superiority why they were so afraid of us to begin with, and maybe this time we could win.
Or maybe we'd lose, Kimmelin said quietly.
Maybe,
Jorgen said. If you're losing now, would that outcome be so different? I asked. Before anyone could answer me, the door opened, revealing Admiral Cobb in the hallway.
Is this a social visit?
He asked to the room. Jorgen startled.
No, sir. I mean, we brought Alanique some food and we were talking, but at ease,
Cobb said, though he was the one who looked uneasy as he checked behind him in the hallway and then closed the door. He limped toward us, leaning on a cane.
Any word from the assembly?
FM asked.
Yes,
Cobb said.
They've granted permission for Alanique to remain on Detritus as a refugee.
I didn't ask for that permission, I said.
I'm aware of that,
Cobb said. He scowled at Boomslug, who had started on a second of my algae strips. I hadn't tried them yet, and I wondered if the humans would find that rude. I picked one up with my fingers. It was dry and crumbly, like some kind of wafer. Cobb focused on me, and I held the wafer still.
Jeshua has been conferring with NAL Algernon Waite and the rest of the assembly over the radio. Your petition for military aid has been denied. For the moment, at least. The assembly is willing to continue debating the issue, and they say they'll revisit it at a later time.
But I need help now, I said. My people are going to be given over to the superiority.
So you said,
Cobb said.
They're right. That committing so many resources to your cause right now would weaken our position, especially after losing a flight's worth of starships.
FM and Jorgen exchanged guilty looks. I wanted to ask how they managed to lose multiple starships, but I'd lost two so far myself, so I supposed I couldn't judge. I should have asked that my ship be returned to me, I realized. That would have to be my next request. I stuck the end of the algae strip in my mouth, sampling it. It tasted like bitter moss, deep and earthy, with an even sharper aftertaste.
It's better dipped in custard,
Kimmelin said. I didn't know what custard was, so I would have to take her word for that.
I think they're also concerned that sending away starships would spoil their current negotiations,
Cobb said.
NAL Waite has been talking to one of the superiority ministers, trying to negotiate a peace deal.
I nearly spat out the algae strip. They've made contact with the superiority?
Using the hypercom,
Cobb said.
And they want to have all of our resources available to bargain with.
They're going to want your cytonics, I said. Jorgen's eyes widened.
Is that true, sir?
I haven't heard their exact demands, Cobb said. They're trying to keep me out of the meetings, saying that this is a political discussion and not a military one.
But sir,
Jorgen said,
if they're planning to bargain with military resources, doesn't that concern the DDF?
Cobb went on as if he hadn't heard him.
I don't imagine that the superiority are going to be fond of us keeping our hyperdrives.
FM's hand went protectively to Gil in her sling.
Our hyperdrives,
Gil said.
We're not handing the Tanix over to the superiority,
FM said. Doing so would be incredibly foolish, but of course that's what the superiority would demand. Perhaps the humans were closer to agreeing to help me than I'd thought. They did have resources they wanted to defend.
I don't think we should hand over a single hyperdrive to the superiority, Cobb said. But right now, my hands are tied.
He eyed me.
Tell me, would it be of any help to your people if we could send a single flight of ships?
It would be far less help than an entire military fleet. But with one flight, I might be able to assault the ships that were holding my brother and the others from the resistance. I could rescue Rinnakeen. He was still respected by many, even though he'd lost the election. He might yet be able to sway others to our cause if we could show that we had human allies. I would take any resources you could give me, I said, and make the best use of them that I could. My people want freedom. We've held out for it for so long, but my people have lost the hope that they can grasp it. If we could begin to gain ground toward that goal, I believe others would join us.
What exactly would you do with them?
Cobb asked. That was a very good question. To start, I said, I would liberate the remaining outpost of my faction's military. My people are being held on a superiority ship, and the base has been forcibly taken from us. If I could restore it to our control, the other independence bases might feel empowered to fight back. Cobb nodded.
That's good to know. Unfortunately, my hands are tied.
I narrowed my eyes. Why ask if I could use a flight of ships if he had no intention of sending me one? Cobb stood a bit straighter.
I've been specifically forbidden to order any starships to Redon to aid Alanik's people. I can't command Skyward Flight to go. I can't command you to give Alanik the aid she needs in exchange for help learning how to use your cytonic abilities. I can't order you to make an alliance with Alanik's people, and I can't order you to bring some of those resources home to help us here as soon as you can.
FM and Rig exchanged a glance.
We understand, sir,
Jorgen said, looking down at Boomslug morosely. Cobb raised an eyebrow at him like he didn't understand at all. I wasn't an expert in human communication, but that seemed like an oddly specific list of things that they were not being ordered to do. Cobb looked up at the ceiling and sighed, clearly disgruntled about something. You can't order them to do it, I repeated.
Correct, Cobb said. I have been absolutely and expressly forbidden from ordering you to do what clearly and obviously needs to be done for the good of Detritus and her people.
That's really unfortunate, sir,
Jorgen said. Cobb looked like he was ready to whack him with his cane. FM smacked Jorgen in the arm with the back of her hand. He's saying he can't officially order us to go, she said.
I heard him,
Jorgen said.
Heard him, Snuggles said.
We're all going to Redon, FM said to Jorgen. That's what's happening. Jorgen finally seemed to discover what was going on.
Like the saint says, Kimmelin said, whenever you get there, there you are.
Jorgen looked up at Cobb for confirmation, and Cobb rolled his eyes. He gestured toward the door. And then all the humans climbed to their feet. Jorgen scooped Boomslug off the table, half an algae strip still hanging from its mouth. I paused in front of Admiral Cobb. Thank you, I said. I wasn't going to call him sir. He wasn't my commander. But he was the only reason I had hope for Rinnakeen and the rest of my people. So I owed him my respect.
Don't thank me, Cobb said. I'm just the bearer of bad news.
I nodded to him and then followed the others out of the room. Chapter 7. We hurried down the corridor in the direction of their landing bay. Is my ship in your hangar with the others? I asked. Rig fell back to walk briskly beside me, looking sheepish.
I'm sorry, he said, but we kind of took it apart.
You what?
We were figuring out the differences between your engineering and ours, he said. I can put it back together, but it will take me time.
We don't have time, I snapped at him. I was sure my people would have done the same with a human ship, but that didn't change the fact that I needed to get in the air now.
We'll set you up with one of our ships, Rig said. Some of the controls are different, but it's the best we can do under the circumstances. Unless you want one of the others to take a doulo, and you could ride co-pilot.
No, I said. The idea of being at the mercy of one of the humans as we returned to Redon was stifling. I could steal a ship there, of course, but I'd rather come in with my own set of wings. Give me one of your ships. I'll figure it out.
You should take a comm slug with you, Rig said to Jorgen, in case you need one to contact us.
Good idea,
Jorgen said. Snuggles, take me to Fine.
Fine,
Snuggles said, and Jorgen disappeared, and then reappeared a moment later next to FM with a purple and orange slug tucked under his arm.
Fine,
Snuggles said again.
Good job, Snuggles,
FM said, and she withdrew a tin from her pocket and offered it a pinch of some sticky substance. Interesting.
Are you coming with us?
FM asked Rig over her shoulder.
Because if not, you should get back to engineering. You don't want to be associated with what we're about to do.
Rig hesitated.
I think I should stay here, but...
He didn't seem happy about it, possibly because his friends were all running off into danger, and he didn't know when they would be back.
It's okay, FM said. If we need you, we know where to find you.
Yeah,
Rig said.
I won't be able to say the same for you.
FM looked like she was about to say more, but she glanced at the others and stayed silent. Rig gave her a sad wave and then turned to go. She watched after him over her shoulder, though I couldn't read the expression on her face. There was clearly a subtext I was missing there. I'd have to ask her about it later, when we weren't about to steal a flight of starships. I followed Jorgen out a side door and along a narrow path between buildings to the landing bay. Jorgen breezed past two humans who were working on one of the control panels of a partially disassembled ship.
We're on orders to take our ships up immediately, he said. Sorry for the late notice.
One of the ground crew followed on his heels, staring at me in alarm.
Didn't you hear? She said. There's a mandatory muster. You're all expected to be in your quarters for a surprise inspection.
Jorgen looked relieved. Cobb had obviously done that to cover our tracks, and possibly so he could claim later that we'd used the muster as cover without his knowledge.
These orders supersede those,
Jorgen said.
We weren't notified, she said. We can start working through the pre-flight checks.
No time,
Jorgen said. We'll do it ourselves. You can radio to Admiral Cobb directly. He'll authorize it.
Or fail to answer his radio, more likely, to maintain deniability.
Alanik is going to take one of the spare Skyward ships,
FM said.
There aren't any spare Skyward ships, the ground crew member said. We've only now got any Skyward ships again, and we're definitely not authorized to put an alien in.
Do you want to be responsible for us being delayed?
Jorgen asked.
I am responsible for getting you in the air, and I can't do that without... The shield is going to fail, FM cut in. There's some debris on a trajectory to destroy the controls, and if we don't get up there and shoot it down, the sky is going to be open to the superiority again. Do you want to be responsible for that?
The ground crew person hesitated, and Jorgen shot FM a grateful look.
Come on, FM said to me. We'll get you into a ship.
On the way across the landing bay, we passed my own ship, parked among a few with obvious damage. It was similar in design to the human ships, but made from darker metal. It didn't look disassembled from the outside, but when I peered through the canopy, I found that they'd taken everything apart. My instruments were in pieces, the navigation module disassembled and left on the seat.
Not flying that today, FM said. Rig can fix it for you later. Come on.
I wasn't sure whose ship she brought me to, and when I climbed into the cockpit, I had even less idea what I was looking at. The instrumentation was all arranged differently.
Can you fly it?
FM asked. I can hyperjump with it, I said, flying might be a bit more of a challenge. FM pointed out some of the more vital systems, and I began to acclimate myself. I found the eject lever on the side of the seat in the same location as ours. Not everything was different from our starships.
These are the radio controls,
FM said, flipping a toggle and spinning a dial. She handed me a helmet.
I'll set you to the flight channel. Remember, what you say over the radio isn't secure. I'm going to get myself in the air, but if you have any questions...
I had a lot of questions, but that ground crew tech was probably trying to reach Admiral Cobb right now. Through the canopy, I saw Kimmelin running across the landing pad with three men following her. Trailing after them was a short girl with blue hair.
We're all here,
Jorgen said over the radio.
Skyward flight, let's get in the air. Go!
I scanned the ship controls, trying to remember what FM had told me. I found the lever to engage the acclivity ring. Those controls weren't very different from my ship. The throttle, lever, and the control sphere were the same, though the one in my ship was smaller, and this one felt unwieldy in my hand. I made sure to remember the location of the button for the destructors. I didn't want to set those off accidentally. I engaged my acclivity ring and rose in the air and managed, mostly accidentally, to remember which were the dive controls as my ship pitched forward, nose pointed at the ground.
You okay, Alanik?
FM asked.
Fine,
I said, righting myself. I could fly. I only looked like I couldn't. I continued to climb in altitude until I pulled even with Jorgen. One by one, the ships in skyward flight lifted into the air.
Skyward flight, Jorgen said over the radio. Sound off when ready. Alanik, we're going to make you skyward 8 for the moment. You'll need a call sign eventually if you don't have one.
What was a call sign? Then Jorgen called out,
Skyward 1, call sign Jerkface.
Jerkface? My pin translated that to something akin to rude visage, which didn't seem like a nice thing to call anyone. The rest of the flight sounded off, and I recognized a few of their voices, though many of them used different names. Kimmelin was Quirk, I thought, and FM was still FM. I didn't think I'd met Netter yet, and I had no idea which of the men I'd seen were Catnip, T-Stall, or Amphisbina, though I thought that last one might be Arturo, and the girl with the blue hair must be Sentry. My pin didn't even offer a translation for some of them. I didn't fully understand the purpose of the call signs, perhaps to conceal their identities from the enemy, but this wasn't the time to ask.
Skyward flight,
Jeshua Waite's voice said over the radio.
All ships converge above the landing platform,
Jorgen said, ignoring her.
Alanik, we can't use the hyperdrives to reach your planet. Are you prepared to hyperjump?
Yes, I said, but I can't bring you all unless our ships are touching.
We're going to interlock using light lances,
Jorgen said.
We've tried other things, but that's the fastest way. We'll attach to you, so you don't have to worry about the controls.
Kimmelin's ship drew nearer to mine, and then a line of light, similar to our light hooks, beamed out from her ship, connecting it to mine.
Skyward flight,
Jeshua tried again.
You are grounded. Land your ships immediately, or you will face court-martial.
The others began to converge around me, moving closer than I was comfortable with as they connected their ships to mine. I tried to adjust my position by manipulating my control sphere, but it was more sensitive than I was used to, and I ended up jogging unintentionally to the side.
Jorgen,
Jeshua said, shouting into the radio now.
Ground those ships! Sorry, Mom,
Jorgen said. He did sound sorry, and more than a little stressed out.
Jerkface?
Netter said over the radio.
They're readying ships. You don't think they're going to shoot at us, do you? If you leave to fight for the Urdale without permission, you are defecting,
Jeshua said.
Ground your ships immediately.
Scud, Netter said.
Do you think she'll do it? I don't know,
Jorgen said.
Let's get out of here before we find out.
I'm ready when you are, I told him, and reached into the negative realm, feeling across the abyss toward Redawn. I reached for Hollow, feeling its familiar branches hanging there, a solid point on the other side of all that nothingness.
Jerkface, Arturo said. Star Dragon Flight is starting to lift off the platform.
This is Robin from Star Dragon Flight, an uncertain voice said over the radio.
Awaiting orders.
Where is Admiral Cobb?
Jeshua said.
She can't tell them to shoot, Arturo said. She doesn't have the authority.
I wondered if that was the only thing stopping her, if she'd really give the order to shoot down her own son. Jorgen didn't respond. I peered past Kimmelin's ship to Jorgen's. I could see Boomslug perched on his shoulders, though I couldn't see his face, shadowed as it was by his helmet.
Alanik, we are a go to hyperjump,
Jorgen said. Jerkface? Robin said again. What are you? I reached across the negative realm to Hollow, and I pulled. Chapter 8. I'd never dragged so much mass through the negative realm before, but I was met with no more resistance. We cut through easily, like a knife through whipped whiteberry jam. For a moment, we all hung suspended, the eyes staring down at us. A force, massively big and wide, reached for us, like it wanted to smother us all. I felt Jorgen and the many slugs around me, all staring up at them. I could feel fear from the slugs, and something else from Jorgen. Shame, perhaps? And then the eyes disappeared, and we hung in the miasma in sight of Hollow. We were still on the day side of the planet, the sky bright. I immediately checked our proximity to Wandering Leaf to ensure we hadn't emerged in range of the auto turrets. The platform was a shadow, floating off to our right, not close enough to fire. Hollow's corpse reached upward toward the sky, a hazy outline against the miasma.
Saints and stars, Kimmelin said. Does that thing eat people?
The tree? I asked. No, it doesn't eat people. Have you never seen a tree before?
I've seen a tree, Arturo said. It wasn't much taller than Netter.
These can grow up to 50 kilometers tall, I said. They float in the miasma, and our cities are built on them.
Scud, that's creepy,
Netter said.
And beautiful, Kimmelin added.
What is all this in the air?
Arturo asked. Gases, I said. Most of the trees have clear patches of air around them, but Hollow has fewer because the tree itself no longer produces oxygen. There's still a bubble of breathable atmosphere from the plants that grow here and from the atmospheric generators installed by the Lumber Corps, but it's much thinner, and we'll have to be more careful. I scanned the area quickly with my cytonic senses, but I couldn't find any cytonics besides us.
I'm seeing a ship on my long-range sensors,
Jorgen said.
Looks like a transport ship. Is that our target?
Yes, I said. I found the controls to expand my own sensors and took a look. I'd brought us in on the far side of the tree, about a 5-minute flight out, not sure if the holding ship would even still be here. It had been a few hours, and they could have taken them somewhere else by now. But the ship was still hovering outside the base. They'd either subdued the people inside, or my people were too afraid to fight. We were going to show them how it was done. The Unity fighters wouldn't be expecting us, so even if they'd seen us arrive, we should have a few minutes to prepare while they readied their starships. There are civilians still living on the tree, I said, some small settlements, plus the lumber mining facilities. I don't want to fire on those, or on the transport ship. My people are being held there, and we're going to need them to join the fight.
Understood,
Jorgen said.
What can you tell us about the ship?
Not a lot, I said. It's a small superiority transport. It's not a fighter, but it has a cytonic inhibitor, so I can't jump in and get people out.
The last ship like that I ran across was manned by Dione's, but piloted by an Urdale Cytonic. This time, there are no Cytonics here but us, unless they're in the hold of that ship.
Do you know if they have a hyperdrive?
Jorgen asked. I doubt it, I said. They'd never give us that technology, for fear we'd figure out the secret.
That sounds about right, FM said. If they can't hyperjump,
Jorgen said,
then we can put pressure on them. Try to get them to land. Do you know how many fighters we'll be facing here?
No, I said. However many starships were stationed here, plus the number of fighters Unity brought with them when they took the base. They might not have enough pilots to fill all the Independence ships, though.
All right,
Jorgen said.
Our primary objective is to get the transport ship to land and free the imprisoned Urdale inside. Secondary objective is to retake the base. Skyward flight. Detach and move toward the tree thing.
Its name is Hollow, I said.
Scud, Sentry said. Even its name is spooky.
All around me, light beams retracted as the flight let each other go. I didn't see any Unity fighters moving toward us yet.
Alanique, there should be a button flashing on your radio panel,
Jorgen said.
Press it.
I did so, and his voice continued over the radio.
This is a private channel,
Jorgen said.
The rest of the flight can't hear us. Do you see the dial to switch from channel to channel? You might want to note mine so you know how to reach me specifically if there's something you need to report that you don't want everyone to hear.
If I have something I need to report, I said, I could speak it into your mind.
Oh, that's right,
Jorgen said.
I need to work on that. I can do it with the slugs, and it probably works the same. I also need you to show me how to hyperjump without a Tanix.
You might not be able to, I told him. Not all Cytonics can.
Do we have different abilities?
He asked.
Like the Tanix?
Not exactly. More like strengths and weaknesses. And some Cytonics are stronger than others.
Figures,
Jorgen said.
If it's possible for Spencer to show me up at something, she always will.
He didn't sound bitter about that. I was no master of human intonation, but to me, he sounded more sad than anything. Where is Spencer? I asked. You said she was gone again. Was she taken by the superiority?
No,
Jorgen said.
She's lost. Somewhere in the nowhere. The place you pass through when you hyperjump. The place with the eyes.
The negative realm, I said. What do you mean she's lost there?
She went there to escape the superiority,
Jorgen said.
And she hasn't been able to find a way out.
The negative realm isn't a place you go, I said. It's a place you slip through. You can't remain there. At least, you couldn't as far as I knew.
Yes, well, you don't know Spencer. She does a lot of things that ought to be impossible.
She seemed like a good person to have on your side, though less so if she disappeared.
Did you want to pick a call sign?
Jorgen said.
We don't usually use our real names over the radio, but I don't know if your people have the same custom.
We don't, I said, and I wouldn't know what to call myself.
If you ask the flight, you'll get lots of suggestions, but you might not like them.
Why do they call you Jerkface? I asked. Is it because of the wounds on your face?
No, unfortunately.
Are you unattractive by human standards?
What? No.
Jorgen stuttered a bit.
You think I'm ugly? It's not about my face. Jerkface means like a jerk, a rude person.
Oh, I said. So you are disliked then?
I am not disliked, or I was, by Spencer. Anyway, it's a long story.
I could have stopped trying to figure this out, but I was too amused by Jorgen's defensiveness. So you and Spencer are enemies then, because she is always showing you up?
No, Jorgen said. We're not, enemies. Not anymore. We never really were. It's complicated. Oh, look. The flight is trying to reach us on the general line.
The button for the private channel stopped flashing as Jorgen's voice went quiet. We started flying toward Hollow. My ship moved haltingly as I figured out how much pressure to apply to the thrusters, but by the time we neared the tree, I was starting to fly more smoothly. As we drew closer, the transport ship moved away from the base. The pilot had spotted us, because a flight of Unity ships was now headed our way.
Skyward flight, Jorgen said. Engage those ships. T-Stall, Catnip, FM, and Sentry, keep the fighters occupied while the rest of us cut through to the transport ship. Copy that, FM said.
We accelerated toward the enemy ships. There were 10 of them in total, so we were nearly evenly matched in number. As we approached, Skyward Flight opened fire, forcing the Unity ships to break formation or risk losing their shields. We used similar techniques when we drilled against each other, but we used lasers, not destructor fire. In this battle, there were no tagouts, no warnings. The humans weren't playing a game. Neither was the superiority, and it was about time my people caught up to speed.
Alanik, Jorgen said. You don't have a wingmate, so you can stick with me and Quirk.
As the enemy ships broke formation, two pairs of human ships darted after them, chasing them in circles. I smiled. The Unity fighters must be terrified. Arturo and Netter took off through the gap left by the broken enemy formation, and Jorgen and Kimmelin followed. I stayed close to them. None of these Unity fighters were Cytonic, and since I was in a human ship, they hadn't figured out which ship I was in. They wouldn't be able to see through the canopies unless their ships got very close, and even then, it would be difficult to discern faces beneath helmets. I scanned for hypercom signals and didn't find any, though I might have missed Unity's call to Quillan, or they might have done so over the regular radio. They were probably wondering where I managed to get a full flight of unfamiliar pilots within a couple of hours, and that confusion could only be to our advantage. We accelerated, tearing through the miasma toward Hollow. The silhouette became clearer against the crimson sky. Destructor fire followed from behind me. I banked to the side, executing a swivel turn, and opened fire on the two ships targeting me.
Amphi, Netter, Jorgen said. Alanik's got some tails. Give her some support while Quirk and I push through. On it, Arturo said, before I could even tell them I didn't need help.
Netter shot past me, drawing the enemy fire, while Arturo did a swivel turn of his own, pivoting to catch the ships in the crossfire. One of them executed a banking roll and fled in the direction of Jorgen and Kimmelin, while the other lost its shield and took a direct hit in the left wing. The pilot ejected, a parachute opening and slowing their descent. Their helmets and flight suits would allow them to survive in the miasma. The pilot would put out a distress beacon as they descended toward the core and would probably be picked up before they reached it, and if not, shortly after. We all turned, moving toward Jorgen and Kimmelin, though Netter and Arturo beat me to the ship that was chasing them, making quick work of it before I could even get off a shot. I was going to have to step up my game if I wanted to keep up with them. I didn't appreciate being treated like a novice. I can handle two ships, I said to Jorgen. Just because I don't have combat experience doesn't mean I don't know what I'm doing.
I didn't mean to insult you,
Jorgen responded.
I would have done the same for any one of us.
Really? They all felt like they needed to buddy up just to take down a couple of ships? Yes, I knew what we were doing was a lot more dangerous than the games, but for supposedly hardened warriors, it seemed so spineless. Netter and Arturo shot out in front of Jorgen and Kimmelin and then slowed, taking point again. Jorgen didn't say a word about it. Rather, he let them ride out in front of him like he wanted them there. The others must have been doing a good job chasing off the other ships. We were nearing the tree now, passing by the thickest branch of Hollow into the thin bubble of clear atmosphere. A few small towers wound around the edge of the branch. The transport ship wasn't going to get away. Even if we hadn't had the ability to hyperjump, it wasn't designed to move at fighter speeds in atmosphere. It seemed to have realized that, because it had stopped moving away from the tree and was now headed toward it, quickly disappearing from view.
Alanik, Jorgen said. The ship we're after disappeared into the tree. Is there a hangar down there you're aware of?
No, I said. The base with the hangar is in the upper branches. But they call it Hollow for a reason.
Okay,
Jorgen said.
Let's follow that ship. Alanik, since you know the terrain, take point.
It was a good plan, though I wished taking point didn't put me out in front when I was struggling with my ship controls. Thankfully, I had the maneuvering down, so I didn't look like an idiot as I led them around the thick trunk of Hollow and down toward the chasm in the crook of the tree branches.
FM,
Jorgen said over the radio.
Sit rep. We've got them running,
FM said.
They're headed in your direction, though. Took them long enough to catch on,
Netter said.
They had to know why we were here, didn't they?
Arturo asked. They did, I said. I remembered what Rinnakeen said. Just because they understood our tactics didn't mean they wouldn't work. I flew my ship through the gaping mouth of Hollow and into the depths of its trunk. It was dark in here, though daylight did shine in patches through knotholes in the sides of the trunk, some of which were as much as a kilometer wide. Spindly buildings stretched up the inside, carved and constructed against the inside of the tree. Lumber mining facilities, cutting out the dead wood to be shipped to other parts of the planet. The chasm went deep down into the trunk, partially formed by the natural rotting of the dead tree, and then expedited by mining. We spotted the transport ship heading toward the mining facilities at the bottom of the chasm.
We've got limited time before those ships arrive,
Jorgen said.
Alanik, plan for forcing the ship to land?
You can't shoot it down, I said, and they're not going to land willingly. Do you have light nets?
We have light lances, Jorgen said. We can use them to grab the ship, but we wouldn't be able to drag a ship that big without taking out its engines first. Will it be cornered down there? Arturo asked.
No, I said. There are exits near the lumberyard for exports.
It's bigger than a fighter, isn't it? Kimmelin asked. Could we take out the engines without hurting the prisoners?
I doubt it, I said. The engines are right below the hold. My people are practically on top of them.
Let's get closer,
Jorgen said.
Quirk can take a look, see what she thinks.
We approached the transport ship. Erdale transport ships weren't equipped with weapons, but this superiority ship had a shield and some basic destructors. And they said we were too aggressive.
Engines are out, jerk,
Kimmelin said.
No way I can hit those without damaging the hull. Cockpit is possible, though. I'm guessing the pilots aren't our friends.
Not friends, I said. But you can't shoot out the cockpit without hurting my people in the hold. Can you?
Quirk,
Jorgen said.
I think I can get it,
Kimmelin said.
Be sure,
Jorgen said.
Below
us, the transport ship was moving across the top of the lumberyard buildings. It was a medium-sized craft designed to move maybe 30 people. If they'd fit everyone from the base inside, they'd be packed in tight. The transport ship cruised toward the exit shaft. They probably guessed we were here to rescue their captives and that we weren't willing to shoot the ship down. They guessed right, on my part at least.
We'll have to get the shield first,
Jorgen said.
Netter, go in close, get it with your IMP. Alanik and Amphi, ping them with your light lances.
Where is that exactly? I asked. FM had told me, but I couldn't remember. It wasn't in the same location as my light hook.
The buttons on the sides of your control sphere,
Jorgen said. I found them. Got it. I didn't hear Quirk say she was sure she could do this.
Jerkface?
FM broke in.
We can't figure out how to get to you.